Morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Ksuvos is Daf Sadi. We are back on Pei Tes Amud Aleph. Let's just quickly review the Mishnah. What I assume we're going to accomplish today is we're going to finish up this sugya. We're going to finish the next couple of Mishnayos, and we'll hopefully, good morning, we'll finish the Perek. And tomorrow it'll put us in a position where we're going to start a new Perek, and we'll start fresh tomorrow. turn back to Pei Tes Amud Aleph, and if you take a look at the very tail end of the Pei Ches Amud Beis, so the Mishnah discusses the following. They thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf, as long as Zechon Nishmat Liba Gavriela by Shmuel. The Mishnah talks about her ability to collect her ksuva. And we learned a big idea yesterday, and that's kind of like the ksuva's up in the cloud. That's a technology comment. If you don't understand, that's fine. I'm not sure I understand as well. But basically, the ksuva is what we refer to yesterday as a ma'isa beis din. It's an act of beis din. As such, an act of beis din. So therefore, a ksuva document is not actually necessary in order to be able to procure, for her to procure her ksuva, even if she doesn't have the actual ksuva document itself. But a ma'isa beis din obligates the husband to pay the ksuva, and even if there's no actual physical paper that's written, nevertheless, it enables her to collect. What is the most important document that she needs in order for collections? And that would be her get. The get that she got when she got a divorce. So that's her other piece of paper that she's holding. So that's what she needs to produce in order for her to be able to collect her ksuva. The Mishnah says that if she presents her get, even though she doesn't have a ksuva, so then she'll be totally within her right to collect her ksuva. However, let's reverse. Let's say she shows a ksuva, but she doesn't have a get. So the Mishnah, and the Mishnah goes over. What does he say? What does she say? But ultimately, what we learned in the Mishnah is it's not good. Meaning that just because she has a ksuva, which as we pointed out yesterday over Shabbos, is the biggest irony. Meaning it is the ksuva document that says that she's entitled, she deserves to the zuz, the 200 zuz. Nevertheless, the get itself is not was not available. She hasn't shown it, and as a result of that, she's not going to be able to collect her ksuva. Okay, much discussed on that Mishnah, but that's the basics of the Mishnah. And then just one other point, which we're going to go over anyway in just a moment, and that is in the Mishnah, we talked about the Shita of Shimon ben Gamliel. He says that at a time of religious persecution, when no one was allowed to hold religious documents, so then there's no expectation that a woman's going to have her get. So the get will be written, the get will be given to her, but then they'll quickly rip up the get to destroy the religious document, and therefore, after that point going forward, there's no expectation that she's going to have a get. So therefore, she can collect her ksuva even without a get. Okay, and also the Mishnah yesterday mentioned Prusbel as well, which I'll also just mention very quickly. And the idea is that at the end of the Shemitah year, in order for you to have your loans not forgiven, so you have to write a separate document, which is called the Prusbel. The Gemara in Gittin is going to discuss the Prusbel in detail in terms of how it works, why it was affected. Once again, fifth parak of Gittin. I feel like that's becoming like a popular parak in conjunction with the ninth parak of Ksuvos. But you need a Prusbel document. So again, Rav Shimon Gamliel says that after religious persecution and no one was allowed to have religious documents, Prusbel is a religious document because it was affected in order because of the Shemitah year. So therefore, people wrote the Prusbel, they tore it up immediately, and so therefore you didn't have to procure the Prusbel document as well. Okay.
When she comes without a get, what does her husband say?
Well, again, all the details we're going to fill out as we go through the Gemara. Right now, just the very, very basics, and we're going to start with the details. In fact, we're going to start with the details right now. Let's go back to the Gemara. Let's start from the Gemara again, and the Gemara is going to be discussing the following. Shema mina kosher shover. Now, I know we did this yesterday, but just to get us back into the flow of the discussion. So it seems pretty evident from the Mishnah that a receipt is written. As we pointed out yesterday, the writing of a receipt is a major controversy. The Gemara at the end of Baba Basra has a major discussion amongst Tanaim, whether or not one should write a shover, should not write a shover. Do you write receipts for loans that were paid? As I pointed out yesterday, just quickly to reiterate, this big controversy of writing receipts is really a question of responsibility of the borrower. Meaning the borrower borrowed money, he paid back the money, and now what? Now what's the expectation? So if you're of the opinion that you write a receipt, so the expectation is not borrower, you still have a lot of responsibility. Because what's going to end up happening is, but we're going to write you a receipt so that if in the event that the lender comes back at you and says again, hey, this guy never paid me, and he shows off his IOU, so then you're going to to have the receipt, and you're going to have to hold up the receipt against his IOU. So that means that really a shift of responsibility is thrown on the borrower. On the other hand, if you hold Ein Kosher Shover, that by policy we don't write receipts, so that means that after the loan has been satisfied, the borrower takes the note, shreds it, tears it up, and that's it. And there's no responsibility of writing a receipt because we don't want to put any extra onus and burden on the borrower. This is a basic question of whether you write a receipt or you don't write a receipt. It seems from our Mishnah pretty clear, pretty candidly, that you must be writing a receipt. Because what we learned in our Mishnah? We learned in our Mishnah that a collection of ksuva can be done just by her showing her get. And what can we say about about a woman who's a little bit crafty? So she could do the following. So she can go to the court. She could take her husband to court. She could say, look, my husband hasn't paid yet. She'll present her get. Okay, they'll take a look at her get. Okay, he hasn't paid. She has a get document, and they'll extract payment from the husband to her. Good. Then what's going to happen? And she didn't present her ksuva. As we learned in the Mishnah, she doesn't need to present her ksuva. Then what's going to happen is she'll wait till the husband dies, and then after the death of the husband, she's going to go back to another court, and she's going to say, "Hey, I'm a widow, and I need my ksuva." She won't present any evidence of having gone through a divorce, but she does have a ksuva in her hand. And how come the ksuva wasn't collected the first time when the husband paid? Because she didn't have to bring her ksuva. So she'll bring her ksuva in hand, and she'll go and she'll collect her ksuva payment now a second time from the husband from another court. Why aren't we worried about all that? The answer must be, this is the Gemara's conclusion, that you write a receipt for the husband so that the husband, when the woman comes to try to collect the second time, he'll just simply hold up the receipt and that'll be excellent proof that he already paid. So it sounds like from our Mishnah that you do write a receipt.
The heirs
will have to pay.
Right. The
end will
have to.
And it's true that she'll have to make a shvua. This part's true. She's going to have to make a shvua, and she's going to have to say that I swear that I didn't get paid. And okay, that's going to be very, you know, that part will be uncomfortable. But at least it's there's that possibility. So to avoid that whole possibility, you have to write a receipt. So to which the Gemara says, "The enkos and shover lechush dema mafkiluk savasa v'gaviyba." Without the writing of a receipt, why aren't we worried that at a future date she'll take out the ksuva and extract payment for that ksuva a second time? So Amarav b'makom shenkosin ksuva askinan. So Rav says that I'll explain to you how all this works. We are describing, our Mishnah is describing a scenario where ksuvas are not written. Again, what do we say regarding the ksuva? It's an act of Beis Din. It's Maisa Beis Din. And so you don't have to actually put the ksuva on paper. All the ksuva obligations are in force. Whether you do or do not write up the contract. Fine. And here, I guess, according to Rav, right, the community doesn't write the ksuva. The ksuvas are all in the cloud. Meaning it's all there, even though it's not written down. And so this Rashi explains, according to Rav, we're describing a scenario where if a ksuva is not written, so then the reason why we're not worried about her showing a ksuva at a later point in time is because nobody has ksuvas. And as a result of that, so therefore there's no need of this kind of of tricking on her part. Fine. Ushmul amar apamakum shikosim ksuva. Shmuel says no. You know, you can learn our Mishnah, and our Mishnah can even be applied to a community that does, in fact, write up ksuva documents. So Ushmul kosim shover. So that means what now? That according to Shmuel, the conclusion has to be that we have to write him a receipt. Meaning, so again, according to Shmuel, our Mishnah is talking about where ksuva documents are written. So therefore, the woman's got two documents in her hand after the divorce. She's got the get, and she also has the ksuva from the time that she was married. So now, according to Shmuel, you got to write him a receipt, right? Because she comes in with the get, she'll collect one time, and then at a later point in time, after he dies, she'll come back at the estate with the ksuva. So don't you have to write a receipt in order to protect him? So Amar Avanan Lididim Farshliminei Demar Shmuel. So the Gemara says like this. No, there is no need to write a receipt. Again, the Gemara wants to avoid, if possible, the conclusion that we're going to write receipts. Again, it goes back to the question, the basic question of, do we, on a principle level, force the borrower to retain receipt? So we're going to avoid that. The Gemara is going to say, look, b'makom she'ein kotzvin v'amar kasafti. So let's say it's a place where documents are not normally written, ksuva documents are not normally written. And And he says, yeah, but in this particular scenario, we wrote it. Alav lahavi raya. So now he's got to bring a proof. In other words, normally ksuba documents aren't written, and so, but he's now claiming, again, she says, he didn't pay me, and he says, no, I did. And so he has to now, he says, I'm not going to pay her until she actually shows me ksuva. And we deviated from the minhag ha'makom. The minhag ha'makom was not to write ksuva. And I'm telling you, the husband's argument is, I'm telling you, we did. And it deviated from the community. Alav lahavi raya. So the burden of proof now falls on him because they deviated from the community. But ma'akom shekosvim va'amra lo kasavli. Now, in a community where they did write ksuva documents, and now she wants to go ahead and collect her ksuva, and she shows up to court, she shows her get, but she doesn't show her ksuva, and the minhag of the community is that they did write ksuvas, so now the burden of proof falls on her. She has to now bring evidence that the amar lo kasavli, so, and she's claiming, you know, I don't have a ksuva because he didn't write one for me, so aleha lavi raya. So she has to, the burden of proof now falls on her. In other words, she has to show evidence that the husband didn't write her a ksuva. I don't know how she's going to get. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know how you get to that evidence. Right. But still, the point is that that's what we're dealing with. Okay. Yeah, in other words, it certainly sounds like from the Gemara that they could buck the minhag. In other words, both minhagim are perfectly viable, but when you have a minhag of one community, you should follow the minhag of your community. You want to buck it, you may. That's what it sounds like from the Gemara. Okay. Now, what we're at right now in the Gemara is as follows. We have now two explanations of our Mishnah, but basically it comes out that according to Shmuel, the understanding of the Mishnah is that, look, we're not going to write a receipt. Generally speaking, receipts are not necessary. What about the Mishnah? The Mishnah is talking about her ability to collect a ksuva where all there was a get and there wasn't a ksuva. And why aren't we worried that the ksuva is kept in the other pocket and going to be used at a later point in time? So Shmuel says that our Mishnah is describing a scenario where the minhag of the community was not to write ksuvas, and then she comes in later to say that, hey, I know that was the case, but we did, so she has to prove it. Good. The Afra of Hadar Bey. And the Gemara points out now that the truth of the matter is that Rav himself was chozer. Rav himself retracted from his original position and ends up in agreement to Shmuel. And based on the following, the Amar Rav, Beim Mamakim Shekosvin, Beim Mamakim Shein Kosvin. Rav says like this: look, some communities have the minhag to write, some communities do not have the minhag to write. Get gove iker, ksuva gove tosefes. The Gemara now is proposing the following according to Rav. There are two documents. Remember, a woman goes through a divorce now. She's going to be holding two documents in her hand. Okay, one is going to be the get, and the other one's going to be the ksuva. And what Rav is now arguing is the following. These two documents are actually going to be treated as two different receivables. Each one of them with the ability to collect one aspect of a ksuva. Like we discussed already a number of times, a ksuva, aside from all the obligations that it creates between husband and wife, also basically is a prenuptial agreement that there's going to be a settlement at the end of at the termination of the marriage. There's ikar and then there's tosefes. There's a main amount of the settlement, and then there's any addition if he wants. So the ikar, the main component of the ksuva settlement, is either going to be 100 or 200, depending on whether she's a ba'ula or she's a basula. On top of that, if he also wants to add more at the time of the wedding and say that I'd like to be mosif, I'd like to add on to more to that, to show a level of affection, support, you know, and confidence in the marriage. So just to show off how wealthy they are. So in other directions, so he can add more as well. That's the Tosefis. And what Rav is saying right now is as follows: is that when the marriage is terminated, and she's holding both documents in her hand. Both documents now are going to give her that ability to collect different aspects of her ksuva. The get is there, so she'll be able to collect the ikar ksuva. So the 100 to 200, the base value of the ksuva, that's going to be collected with the get. And the ksuva, on the other hand, is going to be collected with the, I'm sorry, the Tosefis is going to be collected with the Ksuva. And then he ends up by saying, and there's really nothing to respond to at that point in time, meaning all bases are covered, and therefore there is no concern whatsoever for any kind of chicanery. Rashi points out, to take a look at the Rashi towards the bottom, Hadabay, right? This is now Rashi explaining, meaning now when you look back at our Mishnah, so now we'll go back to the Mishnah, and we'll just simply give a very easy explanation of the Mishnah. When she procures her get, and she says, here I am, I'd like to get a divorce. And she shows the get. So now, according to this new Pshat and Rav, what is she going to get when she shows off the get? It's very simple. She'll get Ikr Ksuva. She'll get the base value of the Ksuva. Gova Ikr Ksuva, so the Hainu Manu Masayim. The Gova Dektani Masisin Ikr Kamar. Now, even though the Mishnah says she collects, but now in our explanation of the Mishnah, what collection means is collection of the base value. Velo Tosefes. Vechi Mafka Ksuva below Ged. Gova Tosefes. And now, let's say at a later point in time, she shows her Ksuva. But she doesn't have a get to show that goes along with it. Perfect. So then, if there's a Tosefis in the Ksuva, that'll get paid to her based on her showing the Ksuva. And the reason why is because we're not going to pay the Ikr Ksuva, because the Ikr Ksuva is only going to come as a result of the get.
But Alex was asking, how do you know it's 100 or 200? The husband can say, okay, I'll give you 100.
I pointed out yesterday that part I'm not sure. Meaning the basis, you're going to have a choice of either going to be 100 or 200, right, depending on she's a Pesula Ba'ula. Okay, and does she need to bring evidence that she was a Pesula at the time? So that part I'm not sure about. It's a good question. I don't know. That's Rav's understanding, and now based on that, so once again, now comes out that our Mishnah doesn't have to be limited to a scenario of a community that doesn't write ksuvas. No, it could be to a community where it does write ksuvas. The reason why we're not worried about her up to no good and trying to collect twice is because she cannot. She literally won't be able to collect twice. When she shows her get, that'll be then the husband will pay her the ikr ksuva. When she shows her ksuva, that'll be just the Tosefes, and that'll be it. And needless to say, well, not needless to say, because the Gemara is going to say it later on, and then in terms of when her base ksuva is being paid, because she showed the get, so what we're going to do is we're going to tear the get up. Yeah. Right, so that, I mean, this is an obvious point the Gemara is going to make later on, but I'll just mention it now. Otherwise, she'll just come back in with the get a second time and a third time to another base din and to a third base din, and she'll keep extracting that base value. Tanan. Well, I'm sorry, what? I'm not following. The ksuva, after the ksuva showed, she'll destroy the ksuva. Tenan, ksuva ve'ini maget hu ameres. Now, let's take a look back at our Mishnah and let's review what we learned back in the Mishnah. Ksuva ve'ini maget. So let's say there is all he shows is a ksuva, but he doesn't show a get. So, and what are the claims? He omeres avad giti. So his claim is, I'm sorry, thank you. So she says, I lost my get, and v'hu omer avad shavri. And he says, well, that's funny, I lost my receipt. V'chein b'chov shahotzi shtar... Huh? Yeah, correct. V'chein b'chov shahotzi shtar chov. And similarly, let's say if it's just a regular creditor, and he comes over to his borrower, and he says, okay, look, you need to pay me. We've concluded. However, as we already talked about, the Mishnah is describing a very specific scenario, which is that it's after the end of the Shemitah year, right? Shemitah is Meshamet. Shemitah forgives all loans at its conclusion. So he says now, and all he's got is the IOU. He just has a note, and he does not have the prizbal that was necessary in order to protect his loan. The enimot prizbal hare elu lo yiparu. So in both of these cases, they're not going to get paid. So that is right now just a review of the Mishnah. Bishlam l'Shmuel mukila b'makom shein kosvin. So look, according to Shmuel, it works out great. Because remember, what is Shmuel saying? Shmuel's saying that, right, not like Rav. Rav said that, Rav had this very fancy pshat that the two documents are going to be able to collect two different aspects of her ksuva. The get is there to collect the base, and the ksuva is there to collect the tosefis. But that wasn't Shmuel's pshat. Shmuel's pshat was much easier, and Shmuel's pshat is that when she shows the get, she'll collect everything, both the ikar and the tosefis. Well, how come the Mishnah, she's not showing a ksuva? Because the Mishnah is talking about a community where a ksuva wasn't written. So the Gemara says, "Bishlam Shmuel Mukalab b'Malkum Shein Kosvin v'Amar Kasafti." So the Gemara says, "How does the pshat in the Mishnah work? Very simple. According to Shmuel, we're talking about a community that doesn't write a ksuva, and the ksuva is Maisa Beis Din. It's understood. It's implicit. It's there, even though it's not written." And his claim now is, I'm not paying her anything because I wrote her a ksuva, and she's holding a ksuva against me, and she's just not bringing it to court now. The Amrina Le, I see Raya, the Elo, my see Raya, Amrina Le Zilpare. Where we say to the husband, look, you're really in a poor position right now, because you're claiming that there's a ksuva outstanding. She's holding the ksuva in her hand. But we're living in a community where nobody writes a ksuva. So you went against the minhag hamakom, and you're claiming that you did write a ksuva, even though nobody did, right? Who told you to write a ksuva? And you want now protection against that? I'm really sorry, but you have to bring a proof that you physically wrote a ksuva. Then and only then, you're going to withhold payment until she shows a ksuva. Otherwise, you're going to have to pay her now. So good. So that's a perfect way of understanding the Mishnah. Ela l'Rav. So now, but let's now go to Rav. Nehi de'ik or lo gav yitosefes mi'ag tikbe. So the Gemara says, but according to Rav, I don't understand. She now is coming and she's showing her ksuva, and she doesn't have a get to show. So So why not, according to Rav, look, you're not going to pay her the Iker Ksuva, that I understand. She doesn't have a get. But let's pay her, according to you, Rav, pay her the Tosefes, because according to you, Rav, the Ksuva document is enough to extract the Tosefes. So Amar Rav Yosef, Hachaba Maiskinan, Kisha Einsham, Ede Gerushin. So the Gemara says, okay, this helps us clarify and understand the Mishnah. The way Rav would learn the Mishnah is as follows. She's coming into court. She doesn't have her get document. She only has her ksuva. She's claiming they went through a divorce, but she has no actual proof. Meaning she doesn't have the get document, which would be in of itself great proof. But neither does she even have witnesses that says she got a divorce. So all she has right now is her word and a ksuva document, and on that alone we won't be able to collect. And we're going to believe him. So, and the reason why, says the Gemara, Kshen Shamedi Gerishin, Migo Diachol Amemar. Because think about it now. So what is the husband's position right now? So he could say, Lo Gireshtiha. Look, says the husband, you know, what I really could tell you right now is I didn't divorce you. Now, whether that is or is not true, remember, the basic principle of Migu is that I could say this, and it's a move that would be checkmate, so you would have to believe me on that. So once I say something less than that, so I'm extended credibility on something less than that as well. So very, very good point. I'll get to that point in just a moment. Okay, Phil, that was good thinking on your part. Just one second. So he could say, look, truth of the matter is that we're still married, so I'm not going to pay ksuva because we're still married. That's what he could say. So as a result, Yochel Amemar Gerashia v'nasati la ksuvasa. So what he could also say now is that no, that the we went through a divorce and I paid you back a ksuva. So that's the migo of the husband. As a result of that, the migo of the husband, so therefore he's extended credibility in such a scenario, and that is why she cannot come, and with just a ksuva alone and no witnesses or no documentation they got a divorce, and that's why he's not going to have to pay her. So a couple things over here in terms of this migu. It is a little bit strange because let's consider now what's happening. She's coming to him and she's saying, hey, you need to pay me because we got a divorce, and she doesn't have a day gerushin. So she's got nothing to prove it. So first of all, just as a basic, why would we believe her altogether? Meaning, the Gemara says that because he has a migu, so therefore we're going to believe him over her. Meaning, why did we even need a migu for him? Meaning, think about what she's just coming in and she's claiming that they got a divorce and she doesn't have her get in her hand right now and she doesn't have Ada Gerushin. Like why does the Gemara need to explain to us that he does have a strong position because of his migu? Meaning, what basis would we have even argued that they actually went through a divorce? Just because she said so. So Tosfos over here is bothered by that. But Tosfos actually points out the very bottom Tosfos on the Amud. Migo diachol lomar loger eshticha. So Tosfos says for Rav Yochanan mifarish achi kedibrish leel. The im tomar the amar Rav. The Tosfos on the top of the next Amud. Now we know that Rav says hamnuna hayisha sharam labala gerashia nemenis. Rav Yochanan isled Rav hamnuna la beperik sheni. This takes us way back, and we have general chazakas, we have general presumptions. One of the presumptions that we had that we discussed earlier is, a woman won't look directly at her husband, and say to her, you divorced me, unless it's true. Meaning, right? We have a general concept throughout Shas that people don't have that much chutzpah. Okay, I know empirically we may disagree, but the Gemara says but we don't have that much chutzpah. It would take a tremendous amount of chutzpah for a woman to be right with her husband, or what now she claims her ex-husband, and say he divorced me, and meanwhile he didn't. And so generally now, credibility is extended to the woman because of this general presumption of chazaka that women will not lie directly to their husband. So now if that's true, so now Tosfos has to explain the other direction. Our Gemara says, yeah, but now we're going to believe the husband because of his migul. Why? So Tosfos says, again, top of the Tosfos v'yesh lomar, d'lo mehemna ela dafke hecha de'ein tovas k'suvasa, aval tovas k'suvasa lo mehemna, d'shem amach maschim od mamon omeris kein. So great line in Tosfos, and really speaks to a powerful truth. And that is as follows. If a woman claims that she got a divorce from her husband and she doesn't have the documentation and she doesn't have witnesses and there's no money involved in the discussion, meaning all she's just trying to establish is that she got divorced and she's not there to collect money, so then we say that generally speaking she has a chazaka, she has a presumption that what she's telling the truth. However, if she's coming and she's saying, I got a divorce and I'd like my ksuva, so now... Right, money unfortunately is the answer to most of life's questions. Okay, don't quote me, even though I put it on tape. And if she's coming and she's saying we got a divorce and I want a ksuva, so despite the fact that generally speaking women will not lie directly to the husband about something like you divorced me, but if there's money involved, so that because of that chimud mammon, because of that love for money that we all unfortunately have, so therefore that really tampers with her credibility, and we at that point have to say, I'm not sure if she's telling the truth. And on top of that, now he's got a migu. In other words, his counter argument could be, well, look, which we're going to explore in just a moment. So therefore, she's not going to believe under these circumstances. Very fascinating Tosfos. And now let's move on to Phil's question. Let's explore his migu for just a moment. Very interesting. He says, well, you know, he could have made a stronger argument. What's a stronger argument? His stronger argument could have been, well, I could get off right now and saying that we never got a divorce and we're still married. And because I could say that, so therefore I'm also going to say now that we went through a divorce and I did pay your ksuva. Migu is built on the idea that your first position that you could have taken is a really strong position. As Phil points out, as Tosfos points out, they're right, it's not such a strong position. Meaning, what's his first point? His first point is, I could say that we're married. That doesn't put him in the best position. Second Tosfos on the Amud, or first Dibur HaMaskal on Amud Beis. Yachol Amar Gerashtiv and Asati Veim Tomer My Migu Ze Dim Yomar La Gerashtich Is Chayv B'Sher Ksus Ve'Achshav Damar Parit Poter Atzmo. So Tosfos says it's a little bit strange over here, where she, if he says that, if his claim is that they are actually married, so is he going to have all these financial obligations? It's not the best position to put himself in to make the argument that, hey, I could say we're married. Okay, and you're going to be still financially, you're going to be financially obligated. The yesh lamar de kishamar lo gerashticha nami pater gami sheruksus de dam lo tanuchitim v'hodol abasarim. So Tosfos is a very interesting idea. Tosfos says that when he says, I didn't divorce you, he's still going to be exempt from all those all those obligations. Tosfos compares it to a case in Shavuos, To explain the comparison, it'll take a little bit of time. I'll tell you the truth. I'm up against the clock, and we're behind. So please take a look. See the Gemara in Shavuos. See how the comparison works. But basically, Tosfos wants to argue that in this scenario where she's coming and she's saying we got a divorce, and he's saying no, we never got a divorce. Under those circumstances, he wouldn't be obligated to pay her all the mizonos and all of his obligations. And see the Gemara in Shavuos for the comparison and why that should be. But basically, Tosfos is trying to argue that even in his original claim, he won't be obligated financially at all. Okay. Let's go back to our Gemara. Hamiditani Seifa. Okay. So the Gemara says like this. Okay, so again, now back to the Gemara. Let's reset everything. This is a bit of a complicated Gemara, but basically, we have two approaches of how to understand our Mishnah. We have the Rav approach and the Shmuel approach. Rav says that our two pieces of paper, or two documents, are there to collect two different aspects of the Ksuva. The Get is there to collect the base. The Ksuva itself is to collect the Tosafis. And our Mishnah is fine. And our Mishnah, even though the second half of the Mishnah is describing a scenario in which she does bring the ksuva, but the reason why she's not collecting is because she has absolutely no evidence they went through a divorce. That's how you're going to learn the Mishnah according to Rav. According to Shmuel, things are a little simpler. According to Shmuel, she brings in the get, and that is able for her to collect everything with the get. The ksuva is not necessary. How do you learn? How come we're not worried that she's going to show the ksuva at a later point in time? So Shmuel says that's easy. Our Mishnah is talking about a place where ksuvos are not written. Okay. Adkan. The Gemara says, Hamidiktani Seifa, but wait, look at the end of the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Omer Minasakana Ve'elech, Isha Govek Sivasa, Shiloh Begant, Ubal Chov Shiloh Beprusbo. So how does it work after the time of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? In other words, there was a point of religious persecution, and there was women didn't hold on to their gittin. They destroyed it right away after it was written and given to her. The creditors didn't hold on to the prosbols. So she's going to come to court, and now what does she do? What does she have to bring? So the Gemara says, Bidike de Gerush and Eskinan. So the Gemara says what she's going to have to bring to court are witnesses that they got a divorce. Deileke de Gerush and Mamai Gavya. So the Gemara says, because without witnesses that testified that they got a divorce, how in the world is she going to collect? So in other words, in the second half of the Mishnah, obviously, from the Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel case, obviously witnesses had been brought. And now the Gemara is bothered by the fact that, what do we say in the early part of the Mishnah?
There was
no witnesses. But in the second half of the Mishnah, there has to be witnesses. So the Gemara is going to give us again, we're defending Rav, another way to understand the Mishnah. We're going to basically link the first and second half of the Mishnah together, and that really the entire Mishnah is the opinion of Shimon Gamliel, and it goes like this. Generally speaking, they do not pay. The husbands do not pay. And that's because there were no witnesses. So in other words, nothing validated the fact that they got a divorce. But if there were witnesses that she brought that there was in fact a divorce, Gavya Tosefes, and she comes into court and she's holding a ksuv in her hand. She doesn't have the get. She doesn't know where it is, but she has a ksuva in her hand. At least the ksuva is there to be able to collect the Tosefis. Again, this is how you will learn the Mishnah according to Rav. V'ikari mafke gita gavya, v'ilo mafke gita lo gavya. Now, in terms of the base value of the ksuva, yeah, she brings in a... If she brings in again, she'll get the base value. Umena sakana ve'elech. Now, from the point where religious persecution and nobody had a get and nobody had a prosbul, afagav de lo mafke gita gavya, even though she hasn't procured a get, but nevertheless she's still going to be able to collect her base value. Share Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Amar Mesekan Ve'elach, Yishagav Ksivasa, Shelo Beget Abachov, Shelo Beprosbul, because again, during times of religious persecution, no one's expected to hold on to the get. Okay, I'm a Rav Kahana Rav Asi LaRav. So the Gemara says, okay, let's consider the following now. According to Rav, now by the way, these two Amoraim, Rav, both Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, so they were students of Rav. Let's analyze Rav's position. So with a get, she's able to collect her Iker Ksuva. So Amana Min Nesuin. So let's ask a really simple question. Let's say she's a widow. Okay. So as a widow, so after husband dead, how many pieces of paper is she holding on to? Only one. And that's her ksuva document. So now a nice and simple question. So how is she going to be able to collect her base value of her ksuva. Okay, so b'may gavya. So the Gemara says be'ei demisa. Well, you know the answer is, but the answer is obviously going to present another problem. The answer is going to have to be that she's going to have witnesses that come to court and say that her husband in fact died, which entitles her now to the base value of the ksuva. V'lechish dilma girsha umafki legita v'gavya bay. So the Gemara says, okay, so why not be concerned with the following? Let's say, the truth of the matter is she got a divorce. Okay? And then the husband died. So what she'll do is she'll go to court and she'll bring in two people who were at the funeral, and she says, look, I need my ksuva payment. In other words, now, aside from the Tosefis, I also need the base amount as well. Okay? And she's got everything she needs. She's got her ksuva document. She's got witnesses that are going to testify that her husband died. And so therefore, she's going to get the base amount and she's going to get her Tosefis. She'll get the addition because she has the ksuva document. Then, a little bit later on, she'll come to court, in a different court, with her get in hand, and say, you know, he never, we got a divorce, and he never paid me the principal, and look what I'm holding. I'm holding my get, and that get entitles me to the principal. So the Gemara says, why are we worried about that? That should be a legitimate concern. So the Gemara says, b'yosheves tachas bala, the witnesses, in order for it to collect as a widow, the witnesses are going to have to testify, I'm not sure how this is going to get done. They're going to have to testify that they were living together up until the point of death. Then and only then is she going to be able to collect based on the testimony that her husband died. So the Gemara says, that's not foolproof. The Dimas Amach Lamisa Gershua. So, okay, but it could very well be that right before death, he divorced her. Right, coming off the heels of Yevamos, how many times did we go over cases in which, right before the husband died, he gave her a get. He didn't want her subjected to Yibum. So isn't it possible that he divorced her right before death? And again, if that's true, according to Rav, so she could do the following move. She can collect her ksuva and her tosefes based on the Eidei Misa, and then later point in time with another court, she could bring in her get in order to collect the Ikur Ksuva. So, Iyuhu Da'afse Nafshe. Gemara is an interesting line. I don't fully understand it, but the Gemara says that under these circumstances, well, that was his loss, meaning he should have been more careful. I don't fully follow the Gemara at this point in time. He should have been more careful, meaning he gave her a divorce, and it happens to be that he died right afterwards. Okay.
He told his children.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, something along those lines. But the Gemara says, but okay, he should have been more careful. So Amanim in Erisin b'may gavya. So the Gemara says, what about a widow from Erisin? Now, generally speaking, we don't write a ksuva by Erisin, but the Gemara over here is describing that we're talking about communities where ksuvas are not written, and we have learned that after Erisin. And the very least, the base amount of the ksuva is obligated already from the point of erisin. So, b'may gavya b'ei demisa. So the Gemara says, so now, if she's collecting, she's a widow from after erisin. So how is she going to be able to collect her ksuva? Obviously, she'll bring witnesses in to say that her husband died. V'lechesh d'ma girsha mafke gita b'gavya. So again, let's be concerned that that really she got a divorce. She's holding the get in her hand. She'll bring in the eidei misa first to collect her ksuva once, and then later point in time with another basin, she'll bring her get in. And over here, unlike previously where we said the witnesses are going to have to prove that they live together. Okay, but this is Erisin. They never live together. So what are the witnesses going to say? So finally, back against the wall, the Gemara is going to make one concession, and that's the following. So the Gemara says, look, back against the wall, look, as a general rule, we don't write a receipt. Okay, so under normal circumstances where it's a regular divorce after marriage under normal circumstances, so to say, so there's no need to write a receipt. However, there are going to be times where we have to protect the husband. He paid the ksuva. She's going to come at him again, and there's just simply going to be circumstances in which we're going to have to write him a receipt. Dilo temahachi e demisa gufay unechesh dema mafke e demisa b'hai beidina v'gavya v'hada mafke b'beidina achrina v'gavya. Gemara says you have to take this into consideration because please consider the following. Meaning, she'll go to one court and she'll bring in witnesses that said her husband died. Okay? Good. And now she'll be able to collect the ksuva because she's a widow and she's therefore entitled to the ksuva. What about the ksuva document itself? So we're living in a community where no ksuva document is written. Fine. And now what? Now, she'll take two other people, or maybe the same two, if these witnesses aren't scrupulous. So, or we don't even have to say that. She'll just simply take two other people at the funeral. She says, "Look, do me a big favor, right? I never collected my ksuva, and I'm a widow. Can we go to this court?" And she'll go to another court, and she'll go ahead and extract the ksuva once again. And why not? Meaning, what's going to prevent the court from looking at the witnesses, looking at her, and awarding her the ksuva? So, and she can keep doing that again and again. So the Gemara concedes, the Gemara acknowledges, obviously there's going to have to be scenarios in which we're going to write a shofar, we're going to write a seat, receipt. Elavada, b'makom de lo efshar, kasvin a shofar. So the Gemara says, look, in general, we don't like the idea of writing receipts. But back to the wall, and we know that it's going to be extraordinarily easy for the borrower, in this case, the woman, to exploit the man, so then we're going to have to write him a receipt. Okay. Amalei Mar Kashisha Bered Rav Chisa L'Rav Ashi. Okay, Mar Kashisha says to Rav Ashi the following. Just as a very cute biographical note, Mar Kashisha. So it's an interesting name. Rashi over here writes, such an interesting biographical note. Rashi says that Rav Chisda had two sons, and he gave them the same name. son one and son number two went by the name Mar. And so now that they go by the same name, so obviously there's just one. I didn't know you could do that. Meaning, I don't know. I can't think of what the isser is to name two children the same name. I would just say from a common sense standpoint, doesn't sound right. But but Rashi says in order to identify which one was the older and which one was the younger, so one he called Mar Kashisha, meaning the older one, and the other one he referred to as Mar Yanuka, the younger one. Okay, it's just an interesting biographical note. So Amalei Mar Kashisha Bered Rav Chisla Rav Sheila Rav Rashi Amana Mene Erisin Minan Dislek Suva. You know, it's funny. The Gemara earlier assumed that you're a widow from Erisin, and you're entitled to some ksuva. How do we know that? Ilei Mameha. So the Gemara says maybe it's from the mission that we learned together earlier. Nisar Amalei Nisgarsha Meimene Erisin Meimene Suin Govas Akol. That if a woman becomes either widowed or divorced from either Erisin or from Nisuin, she collects. Now, Dilma de Kasavla. So the Gemara says, okay, but that doesn't mean that there's a default ksuva going to the widow. That mission could be describing a scenario where the husband went out of his way to write a ksuva for his arusa. But the question we're asking on the table is, how do we know that, generally speaking, there's a default ksuva that goes towards the arusa? Bechite me kasavla maila meimra. So the Gemara says, and maybe you'll say the following. That mission is talking about when he wrote a ksuva. So what's the chiddush? Okay, so he wrote his arusa ksuva. Okay. Then obviously, if he writes a ksuva, so he obligates himself. Gemara says, no, not necessarily. There is a chiddush. Lafukim de Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah damar shelo kasavla el amnashu konsa. Because remember, we saw this earlier. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, even if he wrote the ksuva earlier than the nisuin, and even though it sounds like he's obligating himself, but really the ksuva is written out tonight. It's written on condition, and the condition is I will be obligated with the ksuva, but only under the circumstance where we're going to get married. So deganami diktani. In fact, the Mishnah really speaks to this because the Mishnah says govas akol. Because look what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says that the widow is going to collect everything. Now iamad bishlamet dekasav la misham haki govas akol. So if he wrote it, so for that reason he's going to collect everything. But if he didn't write a ksuva, and we're just working with the implicit ksuva that is generated by marriage, so what does that mean he collects everything? Yeah, correct. What do you mean everything? Everything means the base value. So good. So again, the question on the table is, how do we know that when a woman gets married and no ksuva is written, at the point of erisin, there's still going to be a default ksuva obligation that's created from erisin? So the Gemara says it comes from this brisa. This brisa is told over to us a half a dozen times throughout Shas. We've seen this already in Ksuvas once earlier. In Yevamos, we saw this already twice. I'm looking at the side of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, the brisa goes like this. Isha Arusa. Let's say a woman and a man only went through Erisin. And he's a Kohen. And she dies. Lo onin v'lo mitamila. So as a Kohen, he's not an onin. Which means that he can eat carbon even that day. And even though when a Kohen's wife dies, he's now an aninus. And when we say aninus over here, we mean aninus min haTorah, meaning his ability to eat karban. So that's true, but only after they've gone through nisuin. He or she died as an arusa, so he's not an onin, and therefore that day he can go and he can eat karban. And also, as a Kohen, you can only go to the cemetery and become tamei for family members. And when it comes to wives, only wives that you went through the first and second stage of marriage. But here they only went through the first stage of marriage, so ema tamelai doesn't not become tamei for her. V'chein hilo nenes v'lami tamelo. And similarly, she doesn't become an onin towards him, and she does, and she's not going to be tamei for him. Now, time and again, whenever we see this brisa, the age old question that we have to ask is, she's even if she's a Bas Kohen, she can go to the funeral, she can go to the cemetery. What does that mean? Eino velo mitame lo. She can't become tummy for him. Sure she could. So Rashi over here, every time we see this brisa, I don't know if Rashi is consistent every single time, but Rashi over here basically says that it just simply means that as a wife who normally goes to the funeral's husband's funeral, she's not obligated to do so. And it's not a tuma tahara standpoint. It's just a, you know, do you have to go to the funeral? But either way, mesa and yorsha. If she dies, he's not yorisha, even though a husband inherits his wife, but only after the second stage of marriage. Mezhu govik suvasa. So the and if he dies, she collects her ksuva. Period. Ad kan divrei habraisa. What do you see from the braisa? Death after erusin, but before nisuin. If he dies, she collects a ksuva. So the gemara says dema dekasav la. So the gemara says, I don't know. Maybe the braisa is talking about a case where he wrote her ksuva. V'chitim ekasav la my lameimra. The gemara says, and we're going to tell me what's the chiddush. So the gemara says, meisa in yorsha. It's derech lei. Oh, the chiddush is that he's not going to inherit her. That's that in of itself is a chiddush. Amle Rav Nachman, Rav Huna, Rav Da Amar get gove ikol leichush doma mafka gita b'hai beidina v'gavya v'hadra mafka b'beidina achrina v'gavya. So the Gemara says, okay, one last question we're going to deal with, and we end the sugya, and that's the following. According to Rav, okay, Rav says again, Rav has a split. There are two pieces of paper she's holding in her hand after divorce. She's holding a get, she's holding the ksuva. After the get, with the get, she'll collect the base value of the ksuva. With the ksuva, she'll collect the tosefis. And now a really simple question, and that is, according to Rav, why doesn't she keep using the get to collect and to recollect and to recollect? And so what are you going to tell me, that we tear up the get? So I'm Rabina Lansuvibay. So the Gemara says, okay, but her counter-argument will be, what are you talking about? I need that, right? I'm going to get remarried, and I'm going to go to court, and they're going to ask me, well, what happened? I'm going to say I'm divorced. They're going to say, okay, show us documentation. So the Gemara says, "Dekarina le v'kasvinan agabi gita denan karina lav mishum degita pasahu elo dehad v'tik bebe zim nachrina." So the Gemara says, okay, so the court's going to do is that she'll show the get to show to prove that she's divorced in order to collect her ksuva. They'll have the ksuva payment go in her direction, and as far as the get, then from that point going forward, it's torn up. It's torn up because we don't want it to collect once again with that get. As far as her ability to remarry, the basin will write basically proof of divorce, right? A legal document proving that she's divorced, and good. And then,
why should they tear it if they write about it? If they're writing that the kuga was paid and this is done,
I'm saying. Okay, could be. I don't know why tearing it. Okay, fair question. Okay, let's just go quickly through the next sugya.
They're ready to come.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. Good. All right. Let's stop over here.
So what's and, that?